America's strategy is outrunning its force. Why the military's diplomatic corps is in dire need of reform. By Major Tim Battis, United States Air Force. In May 2021, I competed in a Department of Defense-sponsored disruptive ideas competition on the campus of the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. Standing in front of a wide range of great minds, including SOCO's Labs Vivian Ming, the Center for New American Security's Iniki Raikkonen, William J. Perry Fellow Dr. Joe Felter from the Center for International Security and Cooperation at Stanford University, and the Deputy Commander of U.S. Strategic Command, Lieutenant General Thomas Bussier, U.S. Air Force. I sought to convince the panel that the strategy with which the Department of Defense uses to guide employment of its military diplomatic corps, referred to officially as its Foreign Area Officer Corps, has become increasingly disjointed with the nature of global security today and is at risk of hampering America's national security strategy writ large. More than a year later, the gap between our nation's strategic ambitions and the organization and design of the forces and capabilities employed to realize them remains stark. In short, while Washington takes its first steps in a strategic competition against Moscow and Beijing, our force design is continuing to fall out of orbit with the nation's strategy. These force design problems are especially salient within the Department of Defense's Foreign Area Officer Corps, which serves as the Department of Defense's maneuver element in the global strategic competition for allies, access, and influence in strategic regions of the world. From the Persian Gulf to the South China Sea and beyond, often working in lockstep with the Department of State and U.S. embassies in foreign capitals, the military's Foreign Area Officer Corps serves in key posts undertaking sensitive security cooperation activities to help build the capacity and advance the capabilities of partner nations, such as ongoing efforts in Ukraine. Foreign Area Officers serve as senior defense officials and defense attaches in embassies, acting as the eyes and ears of the Secretary of Defense and combatant commanders, while also serving as the diplomatic touchpoint with foreign militaries and ministries of defense. The personnel who serve as foreign area officers are military experts, competitively selected from a broad range of functional communities, such as pilots, infantry officers, intelligence experts, logisticians, and the like. Trained over a multi-year pipeline, they are certified diplomats and versed in more than one language, tasked to advance the defense interests of America and our allied nations abroad. The sensitive nature of their mission highlights why a disconnect between America's grand strategy and the way foreign area officers are trained and employed risks the exact institutions these officers are tasked to protect, America's unmatched global network of alliances and partnerships. I am not the first person to highlight problems afflicting the Foreign Area Officer Corps. Last April, for instance, Col. Andy Hammond, the U.S. Air Attaché de France, who previously served as the senior defense official and defense attaché to Morocco, published an article calling for sweeping changes to how senior defense official and defense attaché billets are managed by the Pentagon. Among several serious problems, Colonel Hammond accused the Department of Defense of misusing key foreign area officer billets, assigning officers to serve as senior defense official and defense attaches in strategically important locations who lack foreign area officer training, lack foreign area officer experience, and are new to a diplomatic role, in direct violation of Secretary of Defense policy. Congress has also taken recent action to address shortfalls and failings within the military's Foreign Area Officer Corps. Included within the text of the 2022 National Defense Authorization Act are identical accusations that the Pentagon continues to assign unqualified personnel to critical posts that foreign area officers are deliberately trained to fill. Exercising its oversight authority, Section 1322 of the National Defense Authorization Act tasks the Secretary of Defense to undertake, in partnership with a federally funded research center, a comprehensive assessment of the ways in which foreign area officers are recruited, selected, trained, assigned, organized, promoted, retained, and used in security cooperation offices, senior defense roles in U.S. embassies, and in other critical roles of engagement with allies and partners. How exactly does the design of the Foreign Area Officer Corps today diverge from national strategy and the patterns and structures of the global security environment? What are the major shortfalls of the Foreign Area Officer Corps as an institution today? What reforms must be made to better organize, train, and equip this force to build and sustain America's partnerships and alliances over the coming decades? In this article, I argue that no clear strategy exists today that employs the military's diplomatic force in a way that is coherent, unified, and relevant with today's strategic reality. Up until March 2022, when it was finally updated, the most current Department of Defense guidance for the Foreign Area Officer Corps was published in 2007, still referred to the Global War on Terror, and was written amid America's unipolar moment. While a new version has come out with some welcome changes, including the formation of a Foreign Area Officer Council, clearer roles and responsibilities for the oversight of Office of the Secretary of Defense Staff, the Defense Security Cooperation Agency, and military departments, among other key stakeholders, as well as a more succinct definition of what joint effects a Foreign Area Officer brings to the field for better utilization by other Department of Defense elements, the document cannot serve as a standalone solution capable of modernizing the Foreign Area Officer program for the era of strategic competition. In addition to undertaking a comprehensive review of the strategy and implementation guidance that links the function of the Foreign Area Officer Corps to its wider institution, I recommend that the Pentagon consider three additional actions for modernizing the employment of Foreign Area Officers for today's challenges. First, rather than being employed rigidly within the boundaries of combatant commands, Foreign Area Officers should operate within the boundaries generated by changing regional patterns of security interdependence, referred to as regional security complexes by academics Barry Buzan and Ol Waver, a concept to be discussed in more detail later. With this, both the focus of individual Foreign Area Officers and the professionalization of the Corps writ large will better attune to the threats and security interests of our partners and, therefore, better posture to identify opportunities to build and grow alliances more broadly. Such an approach will also better align with Washington's cultivation of strategic minilateral partnerships, such as the emergent I2U2 Quad, comprised of India, Israel, the United Arab Emirates, and the United States. Up until the recent inclusion of Israel within U.S. Central Command, this quad would have transcended three different combatant commands. They are all linked, however, by the changing realities of their security interests, from the Suez Canal to the Strait of Malacca. Failing to employ Foreign Area Officers in a way that follows contemporary patterns of security interdependence misses the looming fight entirely. Second, the Office of the Secretary of Defense must review the institutional differences and similarities between the Army, Navy, and Air Force Foreign Area Officer programs, and identify best practices worth expanding across other departments while standardizing needlessly divergent elements. The updated Department of Defense Instruction 1315.20, Management of the Department of Defense Foreign Area Officer Program, does this to a degree in terms of its standardization of a singular definition of a Foreign Area Officer and the unification of program oversight into a single overarching council. Yet left unaddressed, for instance, is the operational definition each military branch uses to define what constitutes regional expertise, with the Army cultivating and employing Foreign Area Officers along regional boundaries that align with how the Department of State operates, and the Air Force strictly adhering to combatant command boundaries. This seemingly mundane concept creates wider issues with the way we as an institution design and employ Foreign Area Officers, in sync or out of step with strategy. Both the Army's and Air Force's definitions of what constitutes a region of the world diverge from the academic programs offered at the Naval Postgraduate School, one of the few Department of Defense-sponsored institutions tasked with educating future foreign area officers. A standard definition aligned with national strategy is urgently needed. Lastly, on the subject of training and education, the Office of the Secretary of Defense should also undertake a review to better align training with strategy. Such a review should look at both the pipeline training and professional military education programs foreign area officers undertake to determine how effective these programs are at cultivating the necessary skill sets for foreign area officers to succeed in a multipolar global environment and identify opportunities to better align foreign area officer education, training, and professional development with American strategy and their intended function. Other critics have argued for similar changes to the career field. For instance, in a 2021 article in Military Review, Lieutenant Colonel Augustin Dominguez and Major Ryan Curtis, USA, argued that while the importance of language as a technical skill has proliferated widely across other Department of Defense careers, the core function of foreign area officers is not to serve merely as interpreters or as foreign service officers wearing a uniform, but instead as military leaders and strategists who are well-versed in joint, interagency, intergovernmental, and multinational skills necessary to support a variety of customers within the Department of Defense and Embassy. This article will briefly walk through this problem in three sections. First, discussing the disconnect between the global security environment, America's strategic response, and the philosophy underpinning the Foreign Area Officer Corps today. It will then propose a vision as to what an effective, modern Foreign Area Officer Corps would look like, concluding with a short list of recommendations and action items. Given the timing of the rollout of the Biden administration's national security strategy, and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's National Defense Strategy, the timing for major change across the Foreign Area Officer Corps is now, with political will growing to support any effort toward defense innovation. The Strategy Reality Disconnect. Since the landmark publication of the 2018 National Defense Strategy began to highlight the role that America's global network of alliances and partnerships would play in upholding a rules-based international order, the United States has made significant forward progress, both theoretically and practically, in rolling out a global strategy to check Russian and Chinese expansionism. While plenty of criticism remains focused on concepts such as integrated deterrence or integrated campaigning, the tangible development by Washington of minilateral cooperative institutions in key regions of the world, such as the Australia-United Kingdom-United States Trilateral Security Pact known as AUKUS, the Indo-Pacific Quadrilateral Security Dialogue, comprised of the United States, India, Japan, and Australia, as well as the I2U2 Quad, highlight an emerging effort by the United States to cultivate multilateral mechanisms intended to act either as starters for anti-hegemonic coalitions, as traps designed to entangle revisionist powers such as China and Iran in wider regional networks in an effort to dilute their unilateral influence, or both. Additionally, U.S. success in rallying material and political support for Ukraine in the face of Russian aggression highlights the continued importance of America's role in uniting allies and deterring the expansionist ambitions of rising powers who see vulnerability and opportunity in multipolarity. Given the significantly different global security environment that exists today compared to 2007, how does the Foreign Area Officer Corps diverge from national strategy in the patterns and structures of the current global security environment? The primary difference rests with the polarity of the global system. In 2007, the world was strictly unipolar, meaning that no other global power existed that was capable of challenging America's superpower status. According to Elbridge Colby, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Strategy and Force Development to President Donald Trump and architect of the 2018 National Defense Strategy, this gave America a degree of leeway in terms of how it chose to allocate resources and forces abroad in reaction to deteriorating security problems. Without a serious challenger, Colby contends, the United States could afford to cover down everywhere and have resources to spare. Today's reality is more ambiguous, and foreign area officers are a high-demand asset that the Department of Defense can no longer afford to spare. Whether or not the world truly is multipolar, meaning that two or more powerful great powers are emerging who could challenge U.S. hegemony, matters less than the perception that such a situation exists. Indeed, such a perception may have driven Russian President Vladimir Putin to invade Ukraine while he thought the opportunity existed. Russia's state-owned news agency, RIA Novosti, included a direct reference to this reality in an editorial by Petr Akopov published immediately after Russian troops rolled onto Ukrainian soil, but it was quickly taken down after their invasion was blunted. Now described as a premature victory lap, Akopov wrote that Putin's invasion of Ukraine meant that a multipolar world has finally become a reality. This is a conflict between Russia and the West. This is a response to the geopolitical expansion of the Atlanticists. This is Russia's return of its historical space and its place in the world. Colby contends that in a multipolar world, America can no longer squander its energy, blood, and resources in forever wars of limited strategic importance to our core national interests, and that America's wealth, suffering, and willpower must be jealously safeguarded. As such, America's strongest currency will be the credibility of U.S. security commitments, yet Washington will also face a world where states hesitant about cooperating with the United States on any range of issues will have more options to hedge against it or align with an adversarial power. Foreign area officers will be exquisitely important here, operating squarely at the contact layer between the United States and foreign military's forces. In reaction to the changing nature of the global security environment, both the Trump and Biden administrations began rolling out significant internal reforms and regional initiatives designed to tilt the regional balances of power in its favor. The Abraham Accords, negotiated in secret by the Trump administration, and the AUKUS Security Pact, and the I2U2 Quad are key examples here. Yet, as mentioned previously, a disconnect within the Department of Defense remains regarding emerging U.S. security initiatives and the Pentagon's posture to support these undertakings. For instance, I2U2, a mechanism for furthering digital infrastructure, logistics, and transregional security cooperation across the Indian Ocean region, up until the recent absorption of Israel into U.S. Central Command, would have transcended European Command, Central Command, and Indo-Pacific Command. However, rather than developing career paths for foreign area officers that would bring a military officer to U.S. missions in Abu Dhabi, Jerusalem, or New Delhi, or among staff assignments between U.S. Central Command or U.S. Indo-Pacific Command headquarters, the current philosophy underpinning the regional specialization of foreign area officers is likely to continue sending Arabic-speaking foreign area officers to repeat tours in U.S. Central Command while spreading foreign area officers who speak Chinese, Hindi, Japanese, and Korean across the wider Indo-Pacific, losing an opportunity, as an example, to align the wider Indian Ocean region's shifting security patterns with America's wider strategic approach. A more effective approach to employing such a low-density, high-demand asset like a foreign area officer would be to guide their regionalization and deployment on BUSIN and waivers regional security complex theory rather than by other bureaucratic methods. Regional security complexes, accordingly, are defined by the patterns of security interactions between a given group of states that are so interlinked and interdependent on one another that their national securities cannot reasonably be considered apart from one another. Indeed, regional security complex theory effectively does what the Unified Command Plan tried to do: break up the global commons into strategically relevant, bureaucratically surmountable pieces. Unlike the Unified Command Plan, however, regional security complexes can flex or evolve based on structural security-related variables such as the number of superpowers or great powers in the world or on the securitization of certain issues that help or harm interstate relations. Boundaries of regional security complexes, however, do not change so wildly in a short period of time that a slow-moving bureaucratic organization such as the Department of Defense would be unable to keep up. Regional security complex theory also pays serious attention to the evolving security interactions between regions, getting after a Department of Defense priority to better understand and adapt to trans-regional problem sets. For instance, one could argue that the security linkages between the Persian Gulf, a subcomplex of the wider Middle East regional security complex, and East Asia were relatively minuscule prior to 2004. However, waning U.S. and Western consumption of fossil fuels since then, combined with the growing energy appetite of rising economies such as those of India and China, means increasingly stronger linkages between the Persian Gulf and the Indo-Pacific are a trans-regional issue that will generate security issues that the United States and other world powers cannot ignore. Similarly, China's reliance on Middle East oil as well as the U.S. Navy to protect maritime shipping lanes undoubtedly generates anxiety in Beijing on how long Beijing will choose to remain vulnerable to the U.S. military for such a critical driver of China's economy. Both the Persian Gulf and East Asia remain their own independent regional security complexes, yet their trans-regional interactions are strategically relevant and measurable. Aside from the disconnect between the strategic security environment and the philosophy guiding the employment of foreign area officers, other internal bureaucratic obstacles within the Foreign Area Officer Corps remain that could be effectively addressed if a regional security complex-like employment strategy were adopted. Indeed, such a policy would better link Foreign Area Officer employment to emerging U.S. strategy. Organizing, training, and equipping a Foreign Area Officer Corps for strategic competition. A Foreign Area Officer Corps that is effectively postured to compete within and across regional security complexes against regional and great powers requires an updated approach for how we as an institution recruit, select, train, employ, and retain the best possible talent for an increasingly critical mission. Today, military departments retain significant flexibility in the ways they manage, develop, and often employ their foreign area officers, sometimes in ways that are effective in meeting the needs of Department of Defense, but also in ways that conflict with other departments or at odds with Office of the Secretary of Defense policy. Yet, as it stands, published guidance continues to generate follow-on problems within the management of the force as well as in their training and education. Prior to the forthcoming results of the congressionally mandated review of the Foreign Area Officer Program, the two immediate priorities of internal Department of Defense reform of the program should focus on first, a review of the strategy and relevant implementation guidance underpinning the Department of Defense Directive 1315.17, Department of Defense Instruction 1315.20, and any other related guidance as it relates to the current National Security Strategy and National Defense Strategy, and to publish any relevant updates as determined by the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and second, to conduct a review of the training and certification standards, training pipeline, and PME programs for foreign area officers to ensure that the military diplomats we are cultivating over decades-long careers continue to be strategically relevant, professionally credible, and retained. Unity of effort and the need for a guiding strategic approach. Without hampering the flexibility and core principle of decentralized execution afforded by doctrine to military departments and chiefs of staff, the adoption of a regional security complex-centric approach to organizing, training, and equipping the Foreign Area Officer Corps will have an immediate impact on one of the most divergent interpretations of standing guidance, namely the conflicting definitions of what constitutes a strategically relevant region. The recently published Department of Defense Instruction 1315.20, for instance, uses the term region repeatedly without linking its definition to any wider strategic vision or priority. In a positive step, the word trans-regional finally makes an appearance. Yet the confusion and lack of standardization continues to reverberate into department-level policy. For instance, the Army has 9 regional designators for its foreign area officers, one being a generalist, while the Air Force has only 6, with one generalist too. The Naval Postgraduate School's Regional Security Studies degree lumps several regions into 4 main curricula: Middle East, South Asia, and Sub-Saharan Africa, East Asia and the Indo-Pacific, Western Hemisphere, and Europe and Eurasia. Yet even these definitions make it difficult to ascertain exactly which nations are included in which region. Israel, for instance, again serving as a key regional power and security factor for many Persian Gulf states in the Middle East, is left out of the school's Middle East curriculum. One can argue that a broad definition allows for the flexibility of a sailor, airman, soldier, guardian, or marine to specialize themselves in a way they deem relevant to U.S. interests, yet there are still significant implications at the operational level regarding the mechanisms the Department of Defense uses to guide and employ these military diplomats in line with published strategic guidance. Additionally, several institutional philosophies of what constitutes a region are actively at play across the Department of Defense, each with counterexamples that contradict each another. For instance, if we determine that regions critical to the specialization and focus of foreign area officers are formed by geographic territories with a shared language and common history, such as is the case with South America, then this would suggest that both U.S. Africa Command and U.S. Indo-Pacific Command should each be broken up into 2 or 3 regions each. If regions are generated by logistical concerns or geographic contiguity, as is the case with U.S. Africa Command, then it would have made sense to include Israel in U.S. Central Command years ago, while also chopping Egypt off to U.S. Africa Command. While this line of reasoning may seem pedantic and an obvious oversimplification of the complex bureaucratic reality faced by any organization attempting to match its fiscally constrained and resource-limited reality with the mission of bounding global security, its primary purpose is to remind the reader that our definitions of regions are subjective and socially constructed and ought to be linked more to strategic necessity than based merely on budgetary constraints. Indeed, the boundaries of U.S. Central Command today have changed drastically since the region's formation was ordered by President Ronald Reagan in 1982, with the Horn of Africa being absorbed by U.S. Africa Command, and the Levant now fully relinquished by European Command. Nor do the regional specializations or employment of foreign area officers have to wait for an updated unified command plan. The Secretary of Defense has the authority now to realign the regional focus of foreign area officers to match the reality of American strategy. Indeed, such a realignment may generate some benefits to the challenges facing the Department of Defense today, such as the helping balance strategic relevance of the employment of forces with limited budgets, or by helping prioritize critical billets for foreign area officers to fill while leaving open less important ones for other officers to fill. Strategically relevant training and professional education. Another implication from updating and enforcing Office of the Secretary of Defense guidance for the Foreign Area Officer Corps to be better aligned with U.S. strategy will be the cascading impact on training and professional military education. Fundamentally, a U.S. strategy to compete against Russia, China, or other would-be hegemons in defense of a rules-based international order must be supported by foreign area officers who are professionally capable of supporting said strategy, whether it manifests in transregional, minilateral coalitions, or in other forms. As such, the realignment of the Foreign Area Officer Corps must be sequentially followed with an update to the institutions and programs charged with training and retaining foreign area officers. Yet the effective selection, training, and retention of foreign area officers is limited aggressively by several structural factors not common to other military specialties. For instance, to ensure that foreign area officers, who at the pinnacle of their career may serve as the Secretary of Defense's personal representative in a foreign embassy, have the requisite leadership and defense experience to serve as credible advisors, ambassadors, and foreign military officers, Officers are not eligible to apply to serve as a foreign area officer until at least 7 to 10 years into their general military career, according to USAF standards. This limit also cuts in half the total length of time that an officer may be potentially available to the Department of Defense for professional training and career growth as a newly certified foreign area officer, creating a tense balance between being in training and being of operational use to the Department of Defense. Add to this the additional time it takes to cultivate true regional and language expertise for officers who do not have prior experience in a second language. While a natural response to these time limits would be to better recruit officer candidates early on who are already versed in the politics, culture, and language of strategic regions of the world either through family ties or previous educational experience, the Department of Defense is limited in the promises it can make to would-be military recruits on whether or not they would be able to serve as foreign area officers if they sign a 7-to-10-year contract for general service first. Another proposed option has been to expand foreign area officer opportunities to the enlisted ranks, and while this avenue is worth serious consideration, many foreign partners and allies are extremely rank conscious, and the lack of a commissioned officer representing U.S. interests in bilateral discussions, for instance, risks sending the wrong message. Thus, instead of attempting to pull the timeline of accession for foreign area officers forward, current ideas being discussed in the Pentagon include options for career retirement waivers for foreign area officers serving past the 20-year retirement mark. The immediate challenge to a regional security complex-driven employment strategy, or a strategy that prioritized cross-combatant command foreign area officer assignments, would be how to balance the training requirements to spin an officer up on the politics, history, or language of another area outside of the one in which they already specialize. For instance, given the changing security interdependence of the Persian Gulf and South Asia, and the growing importance of the Indian Ocean region as a crucial battleground for U.S. and Chinese influence, strategically relevant U.S. Central Command foreign area officers over the next decade ought to also be familiar with the politics and history of South Asia, and technically, Afghanistan and Pakistan remain firmly entrenched in U.S. Central Command, to include India, and may benefit from understanding some degree of Hindi or Mandarin. Yet becoming fluent in a second language is already hard, let alone becoming proficient in a third language, for officers who do not hail from a multilingual household. The best policy in this case would be for the Department of Defense to better take advantage of America's wide diversity and to better recruit, retain, and vector officers with critical cultural and language skills into the Foreign Area Officer Corps. For instance, officers coming into the Department of Defense who already speak Russian or Ukrainian could be sent to learn Mandarin instead, to cultivate a critical core of trans-regional strategists within the Department of Defense who are capable of maneuvering in between and providing key insight on one of the world's most pivotal bilateral alliances. Additionally, while the priority of effort for the education of junior foreign area officers should be to cultivate some degree of regional depth, either in language, on-the-ground experience, or both, a more effective PME program that spans the length of a foreign area officer's career should empower foreign area officers, through various incentives, to widen their regional focus in ways that are strategically relevant to U.S. interests. The Air Force's language-enabled airman program, as an example, has offered up space-available classes to its members who are already proficient in one strategic language to gain familiarization in a second relevant language. Opportunities to expand education must also go beyond language and culture and can also include joint, interagency, intergovernmental, and multinational skill sets highlighted by Lieutenant Colonel Dominguez in Major Curtis's previously referenced article, Participation in Foreign PME, National Security Seminars at Civilian Universities, or Other Professional Certifications. Whatever reforms of the foreign area officer career field as a force, or to its training and PME pipeline, must remain grounded in Colby's earlier warning about multipolarity, namely that the United States cannot afford to cover down on every problem or waste its critical treasure and energy on issues that are not core national interests. Therefore, the U.S. Foreign Area Officer Program should develop a prioritized list of high-demand, trans-regional skill sets, similar to the already established strategic language list, to inform active foreign area officers of how they can guide their own career development in ways that are relevant to the Department of Defense. Incentives to broaden one's language, education, or other professional focus could include pay bonuses, assignment opportunities, or related benefits so long as it contributes to the cultivation of a force more strategically attuned to the regional patterns of security as they relate to U.S. interests. The efficient and effective cultivation of talent, underpinned by America's strategic advantage of cultural and linguistic diversity, is strategically linked to our future success in the coming era of strategic competition. Such an effort is especially urgent in the shadow of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Action steps. The silver lining here is that, outside of congressional action or authorities required for major institutional reform, the Secretary of Defense already has wide latitude to undertake many of the necessary reforms needed to realign the force posture of its Foreign Area Officer Corps with national strategy and changing regional patterns of security interdependence. The political timing is ideal too, with a forthcoming publication of a national security strategy and the already approved National Defense Strategy making its way around Congress, and an already congressionally mandated review of the Foreign Area Officer Program, the Pentagon has a salient window of opportunity to make overdue structural change relatively quickly. In line with the issues laid out previously, this article recommends several immediate action steps for the Secretary of Defense, Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, and Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness to undertake. 1. Immediately undertake a comprehensive review of all strategic and implementation guidance of the Foreign Area Officer Program to determine if the intended function of the program and its underlying employment strategy aligns with current U.S. strategy. If not, publish updated guidance. 2. In coordination with joint staff and military department heads, review all applicable Foreign Area Officer Program guidance and identify best practices worth standardizing across every branch and eliminate redundancies of conflicting policies where appropriate to ensure unity and quality of effort in how Foreign Area Officers are organized, trained, and equipped. 3. Conduct a comprehensive review of the entire Foreign Area Officer selection, training, employment, development, and retention program to ensure that the personnel and readiness programs underpinning the Foreign Area Officer Corps matches the performance and capability requirements as determined by national strategy, while also taking full advantage of America's unique diversity. About the author. Major Tim Bettis is a Foreign Area Officer Fellow in the United States Air Force with experience in counterterrorism, humanitarian assistance, and security cooperation efforts. A graduate of the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California, his research focuses on contemporary Gulf-Arab relations across the Indo-Pacific, with particular emphasis on South and Southeast Asia. Disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed or implied in the Journal of Indo-Pacific Affairs are those of the authors and should not be construed as carrying the official sanction of the Department of Defense, Department of the Air Force, Air Education and Training Command, Air University, or other agencies or departments of the U.S. government or their international equivalents.